Welcome back to Twin Cities News Talk. Justice and Drew along with Sam. She's lining up president of the Institute for Liberty and host of the Langer Cast. And our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer. And we'll talk to him next, powered by Randy's Electric. There was that moment last night, early on. I think it was in the either in the first quarter or the second quarter, when they cut the commercial, and for 10 seconds, the screen went black.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, apparently it was a mistake. That mistake, by the way, they did they crunched the numbers on it, was like a $4 million mistake, essentially. They did the calculation that whatever ad was supposed to run when the screen showed up black, somebody screwed up, and it probably was
whether it was an ad or what.
Right.
It was $4
million. $4 million worth. Somebody had put out a tweet. I'm kind of getting to something else, but somebody had put out a tweet and said that, you know, that that 10 seconds of black screen was a list of Donald Trump's accomplishments. Okay. I'm like, whatever. Okay. Story just broke. Not broke, but it's kind of been trending on Twitter. Out of a CBS News, ISIS beaten, U.S. troops reportedly start to, Iraq drawdown.
Yeah.
Is it crickets? I found it on Facebook for crying out loud.
Troops are starting to pull out of areas where they've been fighting ISIS because
they
ain't no ISIS to fight anymore there.
Yeah, U.S. starts Iraq drawdown after declaration of victory over ISIS. Some troops transferred to the Afghanistan front.
Yeah,
good
for us.
Well, you could have put that up on that black screen. You could have put the extra money that so many people saw on their page on their paychecks and just got up on that screen. And you could have just made America great again.
That's right.
Up on that screen.
That's right. Well, you know, he's making Super Bowls great again. We've had two Super Bowls since Donald Trump won the election, and they've been two of the best Super Bowls
ever. True story right there.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he deserves a little bit of credit for that, don't you?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And one of the best D.C. correspondents, Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. We're leaving Iraq.
Who knew? Right?
Yeah. I just, again...
CNN's not covering it.
You have to be careful. You know how these things play out, and we need to leave a contingency of troops there, but you can't help but do the, which it's just so cliche at this point, but if somebody else had been in office, can you imagine what the coverage would be like? And you just can't help but do that.
Well, keep in mind, right? I mean, it would have been, these things are, remember, we go back to when he drew down the surge, and he said, these things are complicated. We need peace in our time. We've got to negotiate with Syria. We've got to keep our Palestinian friends happy, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is, and plus we want to make sure that we're cutting a good deal with Iran. This is sort of changed milieu that we're now in.
Real quick, side note, we were talking about our Minneapolis mayor, man-child, Jacob Fry. You went to school with Jacob Fry?
Well, I didn't go to school with him, so I had dinner with a college professor of mine on Saturday, and he's like, Jacob Fry is now mayor of Minneapolis. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Jacob Fry went to William Mary. He graduated about 10 years after I did, I had no idea we had that shared connection.
Yeah, well, I guess it's proof you can get some positivity out of the college you went to, because we're talking to you. Can't really say so much on Jacob Fry tip.
It changes over time, and the college that I went to is very different than the college as it is today.
We were both kind of lamenting, for lack of a better word, the fact that that memo came out on Friday, because with all the news over the weekend and post Super Bowl glow and the Philadelphia fans burning the city down, it's not a topic number one. But at least in my opinion, and I don't want to speak for Drew, but I think Drew's as well. It's pretty outrageous what was exposed in that memo, and I really hope that the outrage that so many people were showing on Friday continues into this week and moving forward as we work through this.
Well, I will say this: there are a couple of things on this. Number one, it's going to be interesting because we don't have a new sort of scandal du jour. It's the same sort of situation as it was last Friday, and it gives us all the ability to catch our breath. There is this interesting side story in all of this, which is as the memo was being released and as FBI Director Chris Wray was addressing the FBI, you had this FBI agent, Josh Campbell, step away. He was literally cleaning out his desk as Wray was addressing FBI employees. And he had this op-ed on Saturday in the New York Times about you know, stepping down to defend the FBI against the relentless attacks, political attacks. And I was listening this morning. He's being interviewed right now by Alison Camerota on CNN. He's now, get this guy, he immediately, this guy comes out of the FBI on Friday. He is now immediately hired as a CNN law enforcement analyst, which to me is just very strange. So this guy steps away from a decent job. He's not, you know, he's not going to be suffering by advocating on behalf of the FBI.
Right.
So he's hired by CNN as a political analyst. Because, and the first question out of the box from Alison Camerota is, well, you resigned because of what you say are relentless political attacks against the FBI. And one would expect that a decent journalist would say, what relentless attacks are those? But instead she goes, what's the mood of the FBI? Which is like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, he goes down the road and they're talking about how, well, we can criticize the FBI, but these political attacks are horrible. I'm like, you know, wait a minute. Why are you not putting the blame squarely where it needs to be, which is on FBI and DOJ? If anybody's eroding the confidence in the FBI and the DOJ, which nobody really is, but if anybody is doing it, it is the people who allow these activities to go on. And I sort of sat there in the memo, right? The most important point of the memo isn't that it laid out that that there was poisoned information, you know, poison games in terms of how the FISA application against Carter Page was getting. It's that the memo confirms the relationship between Bruce Orr, Nellie Orr, and Christopher Steele, right? Bruce Orr at the Department of Justice, Nellie Orr at Fusion GPS, Chris Steele, the spy operative, and it further gives evidence of this timeline that something really serious was going on at the FBI between late June and late July of 2016.
And that's that all of these individuals potentially were working, and feel free to correct me, but all the individuals you mentioned, you had Christopher Steele, this you know, Russian spy for again, lack of a better word, and then the individuals in the FBI, it all kind of confirms that they could potentially have all been working together on this whole thing.
Let me lay out a summarized timeline.
Okay, all right.
So June 27th, Loretta Lynch, Attorney General of the United States, meets with Bill Clinton. All right? July 1, 2, Peter Strzok sends a text message. Peter Strzok, the FBI agent involved in the Hillary Clinton investigation, sends an email to Lisa Page, or text to Lisa Page, saying that, you know, I think Attorney General Lynch knows that Clinton's going to be exonerated. Strzok interviews Clinton over the weekend, doesn't take notes, doesn't record it. He edits Comey's exoneration memo. Comey then exonerates on July 6th. All right? And then there's a gap. And Nellie Orr is hired at Fusion GPS late June, early July, wife of Bruce Orr. She and, you know, Chris Steele begins in earnest his investigation in July. And then at some point, for some unknown reason, at the end of July, just as after the baffles have been cleared, Hillary Clinton's been exonerated, Donald Trump is about to go into the RNC and be officially nominated, Peter Strzok opens up the FBI counterintelligence investigation into Donald Trump. That all happened in the space of about 6 weeks.
It's stunning. It's stunning.
What the memo lays out.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's what's so frustrating. It has become political. It was bound to become political. There's no way to get around that. But what is so frustrating is that it seems very, very clear what took place here. Even if you want to look beyond, even if you can hate Trump and still look at this for what happened and say this was wrong and this is not what. There's plenty of other reasons to not like Trump.
Put the shoe on the other foot, right? Take the political affiliations and the official political affiliations out of it and essentially say, imagine if FBI agents in 2008 had opened up an investigation. First of all, anybody who had been investigating George W. Bush and then exonerating or whomever, John McCain, whatever.
Right.
And then they turned around, and as soon as the Republican had been exonerated, the same person turned around and open up a counterintelligence investigation into Barack Obama. I mean, imagine the uproar that would ensue in terms of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and to me, right, this is why I do want to see the Democratic memo. It's all about puzzle pieces and fitting these things together. I mean, listen, I agree. Paul Rosenzweig, and so there are two good criticisms that are out there. Paul Rosenzweig, who I respect a great deal, in Politico on Saturday, he sort of misstates things, but it's a decent rebuttal. David French has a well-written rebuttal, but of course, David French is a never-Trumper, so you got to take that with a grain of salt.
Right.
But the point is, I mean, essentially, these things get confirmed. I mean, Paul Rosenzweig raises this point, which is, even if the Carter Page FISA warrant was gotten through ill-gotten gains, and keep in mind, they tried getting a FISA warrant when, guys? In July of 2016.
Right.
Right? So I mean, again, July 2016 keeps popping up. Even if it hadn't been, you know, wasn't going to gain anything if before the election, that doesn't matter because it all goes back to what was happening. And I go back to this, which is a point that I raised on my own show on Saturday. You know, keep in mind that you know, you wonder why would Hillary Clinton's team want to do this? They always thought they were going to win, right? That's one of the things that people keep pushing back on. And you have to remember that this is a Clinton machine that no matter how certain they are that they're going to win something, they want to make sure that they overdo it, right? Hillary Clinton was going to win the Democratic nomination. She had the superdelegates all throughout the cycle. That still meant that they were going to get Donna Brazile and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC in their pocket to tip the scales in every half because that's what they do. And this is all part and parcel of this.
Well, what they also do is they project. Anything that they are accused of or that they've done, they accuse their opponents of doing. And what you have here is you actually have some collusion with a foreign entity to try to gin up some opposition research to influence the election. So that
I find it tremendously interesting that as all of this was happening, this is also when the Russian agents reached out to Don Trump Jr. and got this meeting scheduled in Trump Tower.
Right.
As all of this other stuff was taking place.
Yeah, well, I think that was the attempt to have some fire to the smoke. You know, they created a bunch of smoke. They needed a little bit of fire that they could point to. So this meeting got set up. And it's, I mean, maybe I'm being tinfoil hattish here. Maybe I'm, you know, buying into the conspiracy theories, but you're right. It all fits together way too neatly.
Wouldn't it be interesting? Now you want to put your tinfoil hats on. Because we don't know what Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch talked about. They could have talked about Lynch exonerating Hillary Clinton. But wouldn't it be interesting if Bill Clinton was joking with Loretta Lynch, hey, we got the Russians to set up this meeting with the Trump folks, and we're going to nail them. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, and you know, and it takes me, just as a side note, it takes me back to that meeting. To that meeting between Clinton and Loretta Lynch, and how so many of us were going, this is does not look right at all. You know, because there's smoke, there's fire, and there was legitimate complaints there and concerns.
Remember, John, A, we wouldn't have known about the meeting had a camera crew not been there,
right,
filming it. And B, you know, as we know from the text messages and the emails, the FBI wasn't concerned about the fact that they actually met, which is, again, if you want to criticize the FBI, that's what you criticize them for. They were concerned about what it would look like. Now, we were all concerned about what it was going to look like, but what we're really concerned about was what was said. So anyway, I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean to hijack.
No. It's all good. And look. The bigger takeaway from this, we're going to get into a little bit more of this coming up. But for me, the bigger takeaway on this is that it continues to dismantle this idea of Trump-Russia collusion. I know it's hard because you get lost in the weeds of the details to see all this, but the bigger picture here is when Trump is out there tweeting there was no Russia collusion, you kind of sit back and go, yeah, it appears there wasn't any Russian collusion, just like so many of us said and have been saying.
Which is why they pivot back to changing the definition of collusion, and then, of course, this namby-pamby, well, the memo is wrong because Andy McCabe only said that portions of the document were salacious. Here's one other thing, guys, real quick. Go and listen to an interview that Terry Gross from Fresh Air and NPR did with John Batare back in October. No, actually, it might have been over the summer, but go and find it, in which John Batare talks extensively about Trump and Russian intelligence and compromise, as he calls it. And there's a piece in which he talks about somebody going and confronting Trump with what they know about them and telling them to back off. And it sounds eerily like what Jim Comey did to Donald Trump right after the election, as described in this memo, talking about what they knew about him. Right? What Comey said to Trump about what they knew about the Steele dossier doesn't make any sense unless Comey was being threatened.
Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty, host of the Langer Cast. Thank you, as always, for joining us and your insights, sir. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
We'll catch up with you next week. And thank you to Randy's Electric for sponsoring our weekly visit with our D.C. correspondent, Andrew Langer.
We'll get your thoughts on this coming up. Want to know what you think. 651-989-5855. Also, we've got comments from Tom Emmer and Jason Lewis defending the release of the memo. And Trey Gowdy, who was reported over the weekend saying the memo has no impact on Russia probe. He's right, but you got to get into the context of why he said it. It's coming up on Justice and Drew. Justice and Drew, along with Sam.
Accurate.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. Okay, real quick. Twin Cities News Talk. 651-989-5855. So, would you guys say that this is a correct statement, all right? That intelligence gathered without proof is gossip? Would you say this?
Sure.
we'll go with that.
Sure, I can go with that.
Is it really? I mean, intelligence gathered without proof. Yeah, I could go with that.
Gossip. All right. Sure. Well, then you know what? That Fusion GPS dossier is gossip. That's what that is.
Yeah,
because it's a bunch of intelligence without proof.
It was Oppo research. That's all it was. Yeah. It was just Oppo research. It was an effort to find something that they could throw at Trump to cast doubt in the eyes of the electorate. And if Hillary had won, that never would have been brought up again.
It would have been forgotten by now. Yeah, it would have been nothing.
Everybody would have been, oh yeah, remember that time in the election when they were like calling him Putin's puppet? Yeah, that was funny. Hidden Hillary, great.
They wouldn't be investigating it. They wouldn't be looking at Russia collusion. They wouldn't care. It would still be there, but they'd be like, well, she won, you know, and it doesn't matter.
It wouldn't matter. It would have served its purpose. The fact that she didn't win, the fact that he went on and won anyway, is the only reason the shock and disbelief that Trump actually pulled off the win in the election is the only reason this Russia investigation is ongoing. There's nothing there.
Moving through a few of these articles real quick, just to kind of reestablish the Nunes memo and what it laid out. This is sort of my summary. Okay, one quick point. It's been 18 months since that dossier came out. Mm-hmm. 18 months since the dossier, with all of the details in it, still none of it's been confirmed. 18 months later,
right?
So where's the guy who's got all the evidence of what was in the dossier? Where's he hold up at?
I was flipping through cable news channels for a bit on Saturday, just kind of enjoying the coverage of it. I was amazed. I was blown away at CNN. The only angle CNN ever approached this at was the angle of, well, this memo doesn't really vindicate Trump.
Right.
Every guest they had on had the same take. It doesn't really vindicate Trump. It doesn't really affect the Russia. There's not much really to this memo. You know, you call that, you know, unbiased. You call that journalism. You couldn't find anybody who would take the other side of that argument on an hours of coverage in CNN.
Well, and to some credit, and I know this is going to sound, you know, just like, oh, of course, but say did exactly the same thing when all this was breaking. You know, got home and was watching the news, and I actually brought Melinda down. I said, you really got to get in on this action here, and I, you know, kind of gave her an overview of it. And we're watching Fox, and they had different viewpoints on there from both sides. And she goes, what are the other networks saying? So we did the same thing. We clicked over to MSNBC and CNN, exactly what you mentioned.
Yeah, that's it.
That was the only angle they had. And to recap real quick, so you have the dossier, right? This is gossip that was funded by the DNC and the Clinton campaign, peddled to the FBI. That gossip was then peddled via the FBI to the FISA court. Gossip whose credibility was held up by the FBI to the FISA court via circular reporting. You had Christopher Steele taking the details of the dossier, feeding it to Yahoo News. Yahoo News then went, publishes a story about the details from the dossier, to which the FBI goes and grabs and says, well, here we have evidence of other entities confirming what's in the dossier, even though those other entities went and got the information from the dossier. That media coverage was used to justify the surveillance on an American citizen.
It was the circular reporting.
Ugh.
It was Christopher Steele shooting out, you know, excerpts from this dossier to a bunch of different news outlets so they would all print similar stories, and the fact that you had multiple outlets reporting on it lent it credibility that wasn't there. It's a way of manufacturing credibility. It's a common tactic.
I mean, right.
It's what politicians and campaigns, it's a tactic that's been used a lot, but this was not just sort of political gossip designed to, you know, put your opponent on the defensive. This was alleging foreign collusion. This was, making serious allegations that triggered this FBI investigation, that triggered surveillance of an American citizen.
And
that's unconstitutional.
Even if you are of the opinion that Trump colluded with the Russians, okay? Even if you're of that opinion, you can't find anything.
Yeah,
that you can't find any evidence.
It's not an opinion anymore. It's faith.
You can't find any evidence whatsoever of Trump doing anything even remotely close to factually what the DNC and the Clinton campaign did with this dossier. Not even close.
Yeah. It's not an opinion anymore, though. It's faith.
It's a religion.
It's turned into a religion. You've got people out there that believe it. Despite not just a lack of evidence, but despite evidence that demonstrates it to the contrary,
right?
The people still believe it, and they're going to believe it. They're so entrenched in this idea that nothing you can say to them can waver that faith.
Now, Trey Gowdy over the weekend was on CBS Face the Nation. And chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee was asked about the recent comments of Trump, who claimed that the memo totally vindicates him of the Russian probe. He said this: I'm sure the president is frustrated. You know, Representative Adam Schiff prejudged the investigation before we interviewed the first witness, Gowdy, former prosecutor, said during the interview. So I'm sure that instructs some of what he said. I actually don't think it has any impact on the Russia probe for this reason. Now, the CBS Margaret Brennan pressed Gowdy on whether he believes the memo has no impact on the Russia probe. And Gowdy said this: not to me, it doesn't. I was pretty involved in drafting the memo, okay, who recently announced he's not going to seek re-election. There is a Russia investigation without the dossier. So to the extent the memo deals with the dossier and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act process, the dossier has nothing to do with the meeting at Trump Tower. The dossier has nothing to do with the email sent by Cambridge Analytica. Okay, so he is right. He is right on the surface. That being said, you had Andrew McCabe, who left the FBI the Monday after Christopher Wray, the FBI director, read the memo, right? Okay, he said that if it hadn't been for the dossier, that never would have been a FISA warrant.
Yeah.
So you can take the FISA warrant out of the mix. When you go and look at Papadopoulos, you got a guy who's a low-level advisor bragging to some Austrian dude about Russia having dirt on Hillary prior to the emails coming out, right? Dude, he could have pulled that listening to any number of talk shows because everybody was already talking about that. The other issue of Cambridge Analytica, which is a company that basically goes and gather data for different organizations and groups. They had some ties to a Russian entity, but the Trump campaign also used them. There is no direct connection. All of this is to say, Gowdy's right. There is still a Russian investigation. When you look at Papadopoulos, his comments, and you look at the Cambridge Analytica email, that being said, though, you remove the dossier and the FISA warrant out of it, and suddenly Papadopoulos and the Cambridge Analytica, they crumble. They're only being bolstered because of this bogus, gossip-riddled dossier.
Yep. Yep. Which is that is the catalyst for everything that's going on right now. You can say that the memo doesn't, quote, vindicate Trump and it doesn't affect the Russia investigation. But without that dossier as the catalyst, there would be no Russia investigation.
651-989-5855. All right. We will get to the comments briefly. GOP's Tom Emmer, Jason Lewis, defending the release of the memo. Then we'll bring it back to some local news. Protesters blocked a light rail rally outside of U.S. Bank Stadium.
Nice job, everybody.
Justice in.
Forget climbing poles. People in Philadelphia are actually taking them out of the ground.
We're doing what with them?
What the city is so they don't climb them, or the fans are because they're still celebrating?
I'm going to retweet this.
What are they doing with them?
Hang on. Check the hashtag TCNT or just follow me on Twitter, Andrew Lee TCNT. I've got some. Just tweeted a video. There's so many great videos floating around of what's going on in Philly. It's absolutely insane. A little bit of breaking Super Bowl news from CNN this morning, real quick before we get into some other things. Super Bowl national security documents.
Okay,
were left on a plane.
Wait, what?
The Department of Homeland Security had these documents that were critiquing the response to a simulated anthrax attack on Super Bowl Sunday. Marked for official use only, important for national security. They were just the recipients of it were supposed to just shred them prior to discarding, and they were admonished not to share their contents with anyone. But a CNN employee just discovered a couple of copies on them left in the seat back pocket of a commercial airline.
Well, the game was over.
No, this was before the game.
Oh, this is before the game.
This was before the game.
Never mind.
The reports were accompanied by the travel itinerary and boarding pass of the government scientist in charge of the DHS program that conducted the anthrax drills in Minneapolis.
Wait, they were in the seat back?
Yeah, they left him in the seat back.
Well, you know what?
Like tucked behind the SkyMall.
This is what would happen if I was in charge of those papers.
No, that's my point, is that SkyMall, they got rid of SkyMall. So this is what happens when you get rid of SkyMall. People need to find other things to read, and they leave junk back there.
The reports were based on exercises designed to evaluate the ability of public health, law enforcement, and emergency management officials to engage in a coordinated response were a biological attack to be carried out in Minneapolis on Sunday. The exercises identified several areas for improvement, including the problem that, quote, some local law enforcement and emergency management agencies possess only a cursory knowledge of the BioWatch program and its mission. Now, CNN decided to withhold publication of this article until after the Super Bowl because government officials voiced concerns that publishing it prior to the game could jeopardize security for the event.
So, oh, sure. Now CNN does the right thing.
Kudos to CNN for that. Yeah.
Now they withhold. Now they do.
Jeez. Juliet Kayyem is a former DHS official who now serves as a CNN contributor, said it was not surprising that the documents highlighted deficiencies. Such exercises are designed to expose gaps in planning and preparedness so that authorities are better equipped if something bad were to happen. That's the whole point running these drills, is to find those deficiencies. Nonetheless, she said the misplacement of the documents was, quote, a really stupid thing.
Was there at any point that they realized, where did I put those?
Oh, wow. Where did I leave those documents?
Oh, jeez. What do I do?
Did I leave those on the plane?
What do I do now? You know, real, we're going to, I do want to get to these comments from Tom Emmer and Jason Lewis, and we're going to talk a bit about protesting with Black Lives Matter and the Metro Transit over the weekend.
Which is something that the local officials did not seem particularly prepared for.
Yeah, exactly. But I want to double back just briefly to the Philly protest thing going on. We were joking about it earlier, but I really do believe there is some there about individuals, groups of people who decide to take to the streets and start causing damage. And the protesting and ripping up light poles and flipping cars and setting stuff on fire and breaking Macy's windows of celebrating Philadelphia Eagles fans, and then the protests that are done over individuals being angry, and how both of those scenarios are based off of humans who need to have some type of outlet because they can't seem to control their emotions at a certain point. I think if we start looking at that angle of it, we can find a better solution. Like, we were joking about having everybody channeled to somewhere, but there is something to be said that for some reason, you get that mob mentality and a bunch of people fired up for one reason or another. It could be positive, it could be negative, and they're both committing the same acts of violence.
Yeah.
Why have we not started to, oh, you know what? You probably could. If you, like, had, like, law enforcement there to quell everything before it got out of hand and they were allowed to go and do so, maybe that's part of the...
But law enforcement, you know, visible law enforcement provides a chilling effect, John. It's a chilling effect.
Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right.
It makes some people uncomfortable.
Real quick, out of the Star Tribune, and then we'll move on to some of those local issues. The declassified memo released on Friday. A couple of comments. One from Minnesota Representative Jason Lewis. He did vote against, by the way, the Congress's recent reauthorization of FISA. He called the releasing of the memo the right move, saying, "I've repeatedly stated my concerns over unwarranted FISA wiretaps. One reason why I voted against reauthorization," Lewis said in a statement, "after reviewing the classified intel memo regarding possible abuses, I am more troubled than ever. Transparency demands that we release the memo." And then Representative Tom Emmer, who we had on the show Friday and like at the end of our conversation before we had knew the contents of the memo had dropped that he'd read it.
Yeah.
He said, "In the spirit of transparency, I fully support the release of the memo to the American people. I also fully support our nation's law enforcement, including the principal federal law enforcement agency, the FBI, whose work is imperative for the safety and security of our nation."
Here's the thing. You know, before the memo got released, you had Adam Schiff and a bunch of other people out there saying, you know, all these terrible things that were in this memo and all the terrible things that the consequences of releasing this memo, that it contained vital national security information, that it would damage our national security efforts. There's nothing in the memo to substantiate the things that he was warning against when he was saying that it shouldn't be released.
Right.
So why should we give him any credibility now?
Yeah.
He was basically just out there lying about the contents of this memo.
Minnesota's two Democratic senators railed against the memo's release. Okay. Would you like to hear Amy Klobuchar's response to this? Okay. Amy Klobuchar said this. "The Nunes memo was released against the better judgment and expert counsel of our law enforcement and national security officials." Okay. The FBI. The FBI
made them look bad.
The FBI came out and said that. Okay. She went on to say this, though. "The release of classified materials and misleading information undermines our national security and intelligence gathering capabilities. As a former prosecutor, I am also extremely concerned that the decision to release the memo continues to muddle the much-needed separation between politics and any law enforcement investigation."
That's what the memo is talking about!
Ding, ding! Ah!
The memo is basically saying that separation, that much needed separation between politics and law enforcement investigations, was completely obliterated.
It's her statement's only true if she's referring directly to the details of the memo itself. That's unbelievable. Look, you can, again, and look, based off her statement, you can still believe, if you want, that it's not a bunch of unsubstantiated gossip in this dossier, right? Amy Klobuchar could, I'm not saying she does, but I'm saying she could still say that she thinks it's legit, but it does show exactly what she said, the much-needed separation between politics and law enforcement. Andrew Langer, who was on earlier in the hour, and if you missed it, be sure to go back and listen to the podcast, talked about the connection between the guy that wrote it, the European spy, right? Bruce Orr and his wife, their time at the FBI and the timeline. It's all laid out there. By the way, is you know, collusion with a European, like an MI6 guy, is that better than Russia? Is that, I mean, collusion is still collusion, right? It's still, you're still colluding with a foreign entity, but it's Russia. That just sounds scarier.
Yeah,
if they drink vodka, it's cold there.
Russia's much scarier.
It's Putin.
But it was collusion with foreign intelligence to try to influence the election. That's exactly what went on here. That is the only way to describe this dossier. And without this dossier, there would have been no FISA warrant. Without the FISA warrant, there would be no Russia investigation.
Senator Tina Smith, they didn't do it.
I know, they didn't call her, you know, the former, the senator formerly known as Al Franken.
She called for further measures to protect the ongoing Russia investigation from further political interference. This memo was written by Republicans and then released by Republicans despite grave concerns from the president's own FBI about the memo's omissions and factual inaccuracies. It's a partisan effort by the president's allies to undermine and discredit the investigation of the president himself. We should affirm our faith in the thousands of men and women at the FBI who help protect us each and every day.
And that last line really irritates me, you know, because all the Democrats that are decrying this memo and complaining about its partisanship, they're also coupling it with this sort of, we should just have blind faith in the FBI.
Right.
We should just have blind faith in this government agency that we know has been used as a political weapon against American citizens in the past. We know that the FBI has spent more time in eras past targeting those that were protesting during the civil rights era, tried to get Martin Luther King to kill himself. I'm just gonna throw that out there. So they want us to have this blind. No, it's called oversight, and it's called the fact that the FBI is filled and littered with human beings, flawed human beings, and it's incredibly naive to sit here and pretend that the FBI has never been used as a political bludgeon before.
And the unfortunate part of this is, well, one, both of these two Minnesota Democratic senators have their heads buried beneath Russia's frozen tundra. But the other part to it is this. The FBI, those that are currently working in the FBI are not allowed to talk about this stuff, right? They can't. They can't. So the only people that we're hearing from are the individuals who are going and leaving the FBI, right? Andrew McCabe, Comey, the individual that Andrew Langer mentioned that left quietly when Christopher Wray, the FBI director, was making his comments about this and then instantly showed up on CNN with a gig and was being thrown softball questions about this whole thing. You're only hearing from the individuals who potentially had direct involvement with everything that we're talking about in getting this FISA warrant. My point is this. I can't help but wonder if the good men and women who had to remain silent that work currently in the FBI, how many of them are sitting back and are pleased at what they're seeing because of what they have seen taken place with inside their own organization. Obviously, there are good men and women who are proud of this country, right? And who are loyal to this country, who are doing an amazing job in the FBI. But you're not going to hear from any of them. You're not going to hear from any of the individuals who are currently working in the FBI who may have as big a problem with this FISA warrant and what abuses that they've potentially seen. No, all you're going to be hearing from are the individuals who are leaving the FBI, in my opinion, disgraced, that are directly attached to this circumstance. And it's unfortunate. Nobody wants to discredit the FBI. That's why I got so mad and annoyed at John McCain's comments again. You're like, dude, you are not helping.
It's not about discrediting the FBI as an institution, but it's about accepting the reality that, yes, there are going to be some bad actors in any government organization, including the FBI. And that's why you need to have oversight. You need to have transparency. We can't sit here and be naive and pretend that the FBI is this altruistic, amazing organization that has only ever done great things in its unwavering desire to protect the American people from harm.
Hold on. I'm going to get Howard Root on the phone.
Right? I mean, let's not, you know, we got people tweeting now, you know, the memo release has pitted the conservatives against the FBI. This is bad. No, that's not the point. That's not what we're saying here.
Right. Not at all.
But if you're sitting there thinking that the FBI can never be weaponized against the American people, against political opponents, you know, then you are completely and utterly naive. Just go look at history.
Let's go and talk with Steve on line one. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to Justice and Drew here on Twin Cities News Talk. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that the corruption is going on right here with the local people. I've got corroborating information about lawyers. I was right to the FBI building, and they told me it was just go home and distance yourself from these people.
What people?
From my estranged wife. It has to do with illegal immigration. She come here, and she was here for 8 months. And when she did come here, she got falsifying information, papers.
All right, Steve, right now we're not currently talking about that issue. We've currently been talking about the FISA memo and Nunes and the FBI. But feel free to drop us an email or use the hashtag on Twitter and tell us your story. You know, hashtag TCNT. That was a phone call. Out of the Star Tribune. At three sites near and around downtown Minneapolis, activists tried to disrupt Super Bowl festivities yesterday afternoon by blocking streets, light rails, trains, and briefly a stadium entrance. Ultimately, they had little effect on fans trying to make it into U.S. Bank Stadium in time for kickoff at 5:30. At least 40 people strung themselves across the Metro Transit Green Line tracks in the University of Minnesota, blocking the tracks mid-afternoon for ticket holders using the line to get to the stadium. A handful locked themselves to each other. Were they not committed? They had to lock themselves to one another because they weren't sure of their own commitment. Well, if I lock myself to you, then I know I'm committed for the rest of this. And to the railing station with a U-lock. Police forcibly removed 17 of them after about 90 minutes. No one was injured.
And everybody knew this was going to happen. I mean, they talked about this. They were promoting that this was going to happen. So it was disappointing to see how slow the response was and how long they let them go out there. And one thing that's been left out of a lot of the coverage, if you look at some of the video feeds that were sent out, on the back of their shirts, it was all about Donald Trump. The back of their shirts said something like, you know, no more 45 or...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it was left out. To which I saw that and I thought, you know, yet again, stellar job by the left of co-opting a movement and making it all about, let's just elect more Democrats because that always fixes things.
We'll get into some more details about this coming up, and especially to what Drew just mentioned a moment ago, the slow response to sort of let this whole thing play out. 651-989-5855. You're listening to Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice.